You have goals. Reach them fast with IU Online's accelerated degree programs. Our 6 and 8 week courses are taught 100% online and can fit any schedule. Advance your career with a bachelor's in informatics. It only takes 10 minutes to apply. Earn an Indiana University degree that's valued around the world. Get started today at IU Online.
It's easy to forget this, but the fruits and vegetables we buy at the market were harvested by people. Every watermelon, every cucumber, every little berry. It's tough work, and there's not enough workers.
We have in agriculture in general a bit of a labor crisis, and we are very short of farm labor to get all our crops picked.
Continuing to do more with less is very challenging unless we automate the operation and make it more efficient and effective.
With not enough people to pick, food that would otherwise be sold ends up rotting in the field.
And so we are having to limit, as a company, our growth because we are unable to create the supply, and that supply is primarily constrained by the lack of labor.
Technologists think automation could help producers work around this labor shortage while also making farms more efficient and less prone to disease.
We have a whole lot more people in the world to feed. We have a whole lot less resources to do that. We are going to have to change and be a whole lot more intelligent.
But how easy will it be to bring artificial intelligence to the farm?
The Future of Everything, a look ahead from the Wall Street Journal with Jennifer Strong.
It's a crisp afternoon on one of the last days of summer, and I'm walking through rows and rows of apple trees in Modesto, California.
What's up for the apples?
Thank you.
I'm speaking with Stavros Voujoukas. He's an associate professor of biological and agricultural engineering at UC Davis.
And I'm working on mechanization, automation, and robotics for agriculture. And you know, our focus is now on harvest aids and robotic harvesters.
Apple pickers typically use ladders to reach the fruit.
Maybe they're 14 feet high. They have a bag, so they start picking, and then they go down the ladder, reposition the ladder, go up again, go down. Once the bag is full, they walk to the bin, and they unload the fruit.
It's inefficient. It's also not safe. So pickers are moving over to machines called orchard platforms. They look like a series of tabletops on wheels.
And the idea is that the pickers stand on the platform, maybe two or three on each side, and then the bin is on the platform. So as they pick, they don't need to climb.
Vujuka says it's more productive than those ladders by about 30%, but
when you have four or six people working together, the slowest person is your bottleneck. You can go as fast as the slowest person. And that doesn't mean that that person is lazy. First of all, people are different, so they may pick in a different speed, but also there is different amounts of fruit in front of you because some parts of the tree are denser, they have more fruit, some have less fruit.
His team is trying to choreograph this interaction between humans, computers, and fruit-bearing trees, and that's what I'm here to see.
If we could have a camera system in front of the platform that basically finds the distribution of the fruit by imaging, and then if we could automatically lift those platforms up and down, or those lifts of where the pickers stand, and if we could monitor how fast each person is picking, then the computer could do load balancing, which means intuitively assign the fastest person to where more fruit is and do it in real time, continuously.
UC Davis partnered with Carnegie Mellon to develop this system, and a team of researchers from both schools is testing out a prototype.
So this red box is the camera system. It flashes light, and then the shutter is synchronized, so it takes two images. And so based on these two images, it does some image processing, and it's finding the fruits where they are in 3D space, but it's also calculating their size. And then the computer uses that information to find which parts are more dense on the canopy, which parts have less fruit, more fruit, and then it elevates the lifts accordingly to do the load balancing.
And because these cameras feature flashing lights, that also means
you can harvest at night, which people do because it's more comfortable, it's better for the fruits.
It's a temporary solution until growers can automate apple picking. though, that's still years away from becoming a reality.
I was going to ask how you get to be 10 times faster than a human and not damage these fruit.
Well, we people can do it. Pickers are very fast, but we are people. We can do that. Robots can't do it yet.
But in fields across the country, growers and roboticists are working on it. Driscoll's is the world's largest berry distributor, and it's lending their fields and researchers to startups in hopes of sparking a breakthrough.
There are 35,000 acres of strawberries in California. It takes about 1.5 harvesters per acre. So right there, we need about 50,000 people to pick strawberries alone in California.
Soren Bjorn is president of Driscoll's of the Americas.
And the reality is that that workforce is disappearing. And there's nothing in our near future that indicates this is going to get any better.
Strawberries grow close to the ground, and picking them is backbreaking work. It's one of several reasons for the shrinking labor pool. At the same time, there's a huge demand for berries. We eat nearly twice as much per person as we did 15 years ago.
So, you know, we have to come up with other solutions. Robotics is one such solution, and it's a little bit further out.
One startup is Harvest Crew. Its soft robotic grippers help the robot grab the fruits without damaging them. Another berry picking startup is called Agrobot. It looks like something right out of a sci-fi film. Imagine a massive tractor spanning many rows of berries with up to 24 robotic arms harvesting from all of them at once by gripping and cutting the stems autonomously.
We still got a ways to go before the robot is as accurate as human beings, and certainly not yet nearly as fast as human beings.
It's still going to be years before these types of robots are commercialized and working at scale.
The concept of picking something up seems very simple to us because we do it every day. We've been doing it as long as we've been alive as babies. But a baby can, you know, reach across the table and grab something fairly easily. My name is Daniela Hernandez, and I'm the digital science editor for The Wall Street Journal. I cover science, technology, and robotics. It involves a lot of coordination. You have to coordinate the motor movement. You have to coordinate what you're seeing and where you're moving in space. And machine intelligence, for all the advances that have come up over the years, it's just not there yet.
Then there's the visibility issue. Fruit is often hidden behind leaves, preventing robots from grabbing it. A robot can also hurt itself if it doesn't see something in its way, like a branch. Even with good training data, the robot may not be fully prepared.
It's also really difficult to translate that into a machine that does it reliably, that doesn't hurt your produce, that doesn't hurt your plants, that doesn't hurt itself or the humans around it. And all of those things require software development. They require new kinds of hardware and sensors. Robots like everything to be really structured. They don't really do very well with uncertainty or unpredictability. And out in the field, it's full of unpredictability and variations in shapes and sizes and lighting conditions and all these things that make it hard for robots to do what they are designed to do. And so instead of putting them out there where they might fail, bring them inside into greenhouses that are more structured.
So we're going to go into the greenhouse right now, and I'll show you some of the stuff we're doing in there.
Great.
I'm Casey Howling, the owner of Howling Nurseries.
He operates several large greenhouses, including this one in Ventura County, California. It covers 128 acres, or about 100 football fields, that are filled with cucumbers and many different kinds of tomatoes. Unlike outdoor farms, greenhouses require large amounts of an unusual extra nutrient, carbon dioxide.
CO2 is the largest fertilizer a plant uses in its growth cycle. And if you're not having enough air transfer, within half an hour, it'll take all the CO2 out of the air and then stop growing. So right now we're going into the building. It's going to start getting quite noisy here.
He used to import more than 1,000 tons of the greenhouse gas every year, but now he makes it himself by burning fossil fuels.
What I just took you through was where we generate electricity. 6,000 horsepower natural gas driven reciprocal engine that generates 4.4 megawatts of power and CO2 and heat as a waste product coming out of the engine.
In a greenhouse, all those waste products can be put to good use. Extra electricity is sold back to the grid, while extra heat is used to keep the greenhouse warm. But in addition to controlling the climate, he also needs to carefully control the plants.
It's still a living product. that's susceptible to diseases. So then if you do see something, you want to identify it as soon as you possibly can and then eradicate it so that it doesn't spread to the rest of the greenhouse.
Specialized robots in his greenhouse move along tracks in the floor and carefully photograph the plants. Then a machine learning program analyzes the pictures.
It can do things like count the amount of tomatoes that are going to be picked next week by the grade of it, size them so that you can predict what your forecast is going to be, all the way through to bug counts, to viruses, to other diseases such as molds and bacteria. So that gives you the ability to manage your crops and be much more proactive a lot earlier.
Machine vision is also helping with efficiency in the field. This smart harvester from John Deere, called a combine, collects data through a number of sensors and cameras as it trudges through fields harvesting commodity crops such as corn, soy, and wheat.
My name is Alex Purdy, and I'm the Director of Strategy and Business Development for the Intelligent Solutions Group at John Deere.
He also leads their artificial intelligence unit focused on robotics and machine learning.
Factors like the slope of the land or humidity in the air dramatically can alter the performance of a combine and change significantly throughout the day and between harvest seasons. There's a machine learning algorithm that actually is able to identify what the optimal is and adjust it in every single acre, in every single field, every single day. A percent loss of grain equates exactly to a percent of profitability for a grower. And so even small changes in productivity make a huge impact on growers' bottom line.
Some of that productivity is also lost to weeds. They compete with crops for nutrients and water, and growers fight them with herbicides.
Now, these herbicides are only really useful when they're applied to the weeds, but in the name of productivity, the farmers will spray them across their entire field, thousands of acres, millions of plants, where a lot of that herbicide doesn't really do any good.
Ben Chostner is the general manager of an AI product called See & Spray. It was developed by Blue River Technologies, which Deere recently acquired.
Rather than applying herbicide everywhere across 100% of the field, we're only applying it to the 2%, 5%, 10% of the field that has weeds.
And using less herbicide could help us with another modern problem, herbicide-resistant weeds.
One of the biggest problems today for farmers is a particular weed called Palmer amaranth or pigweed. This is a weed that has grown resistance to the application of herbicide. It's very similar to resistant diseases that are now resistant to antibiotics. So the machine, by being able to see it and precisely apply the right dose of the right herbicide, opens up an ability for farmers, gives them a new tool to start to control this pigweed, which is a very big problem in robbing them of yield.
But rolling out new tech on a farm is not so straightforward, especially with agriculture's aging and predominantly low-tech labor force.
My name is Danny Royer. I'm the Vice President of Technology for Bowles Farming Company in Los Banos, California.
The farm is more than 150 years old, and it grows all kinds of crops from tomatoes to basil to pistachios. What's different about this place compared to its peers? Royer's job on the farm is to pursue new technologies.
My first year here, we explored 42 different types of platforms, but the imagery from satellites and big data are the two systems that we're really focused on generating value out of right now.
Images taken on the ground or from a satellite can help farmers detect issues early.
The current state really is that there's a person that drives around in a pickup truck to identify different pests and then make recommendations on how to handle those pests. Well, on a 12,000-acre farm, that's a lot of ground for a person to cover. So if we use that satellite imagery across the whole farm, we can quickly identify problem areas.
Then he can zero in on those areas with drones.
So a drone can go in and take a much more detailed look at the field. So that higher resolution of a drone imagery can actually pick up, in many instances, damage that's caused by a pest, damage that's caused by disease, and we can start identifying what those issues are before there's even a person in the field.
But many of these technologies come with steep learning curves, and the business of farming has remained mostly the same, technologically and culturally, for generations.
When you look at the generational makeup of specifically management in agriculture, 55 and up, even if it's just as simple as attaching a photo to an email from your phone, the reality for us is that there's a lot of people that don't know how to do that. So if I'm trying to integrate systems that require you to use your phone, I'm making a big assumption in that you know how to use your phone. All the tech that we need to make big changes exists. It's just a matter of making it work with the people.
Farmers of the future will need digital skills. This could also help with that labor crisis by drawing in younger workers.
The idea that things are going to change and you're going to have to change how you do things is just much easier for young people to swallow. And I think that it's going to continue to be a trend where, you know, every 3 to 5 years, you're going to change your operating system because there's going to be a more advanced one that comes along. So we need a lot more agility in how we think.
The Future of Everything is a production of The Wall Street Journal. This episode was produced by Daniela Hernandez, Brian Gutierrez, and Laura Sim. Our technical director is Jacob Gorski. John Wardock is the executive producer of WSJ Podcast. Stan Parrish is the editor-in-chief of The Future of Everything. Thanks for listening. I'm Jennifer Strong in the newsroom in New York.